The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and from the AARP magazine. Today's stories include dozens of biggest U.S. businesses paid no federal income tax once again, and OPEC locks in tight oil supply for August. 55 of the nation's largest corporations paid no federal income tax on more than $40 billion in profits last year, according to an analysis by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, a progressive think tank. In fact, they received a combined federal rebate of more than $3 billion for an effective tax rate of approximately negative 9%. Their total corporate tax breaks for 2020, including $8.5 billion in tax avoidance and $3.5 billion in rebates, comes to $12 billion, according to the study's authors, Matthew Gardner and Steve Womhoff. The findings also underscore the favorable tax environment for big businesses in the wake of the 2017 Trump tax cuts. 26 corporations have paid no federal income taxes since 2017, according to the report, including such household names as Nike, FedEx, and Dish Network. Combined, the 26 companies have booked more than $77 billion in profits since 2018, while receiving nearly $5 billion in rebates for an effective three-year tax rate of negative 6%. By all appearances, the companies described in this report appear to be using entirely legal means to reduce the tax bills, said lead author Matthew Gardner in an email. But that doesn't mean the companies are blameless, he added. Many of the tax provisions these companies are using exist because they themselves have lobbied heavily for their creation. Those provisions include tax breaks for stock options given to chief executives as part of their pay packages, credits for research and experimentation, and write-offs for renewable energy and capital investments. The 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act dramatic cut to the corporate income tax rate from 35 to 21%. Also plays a role in the limited tax liabilities facing many major corporations. But Garner says the generous carve-outs, not the baseline rate itself, are driving much of the phenomenon. Next, OPEC locks in tight oil supply for August. 1 week after OPEC and its allies abandoned their meeting in acrimony, the window for an August oil production increase is closing without any deal in sight. Regardless of the desire of other cartel members for a compromise, there's little sign that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates have made progress in resolving a dispute over how their production cuts are measured, delegates say. Meanwhile, both countries have proceeded to lock in supply volumes for their customers next month, leaving little hope for a change if there's a sudden breakthrough, delegates said, asking not to be named because the information is private. With August sales fixed and most Gulf countries preparing for an Islamic holiday that will close government offices and business for most of all of the week, a prompt supply increase may not be possible, even if Russia, the U.S., or some other party manages to broker a deal. The timing of the holiday means the next gathering would be unlikely before the last days of July or perhaps early August. The continuing stalemate leaves the oil market in limbo, unsure when or if it will receive additional shipments from the producers group. While prices have fallen about 3% to $75 a barrel in London in the past week, there are still signs that demand exceeds supply. Next, from the AARP Money Saver, protecting your nest egg. You've likely had years of experience trying to build up a retirement nest egg, plus plenty of guidance on how to do it. What you probably don't have, though, is practical advice on how to spend it down. So it's not surprising that many older Americans who have saved for retirement are at a loss for how to pace their spending once that retirement arrives. Are you going into retirement with any money and investments on hand? Households headed by someone aged 65 to 74 had a median of about $50,000 in financial assets in 2019, reports the Federal Reserve. If so, you face one of two potential hazards: endangering your finances by spending your nest egg too fast, or unnecessarily denying yourself the good life by spending far less than you can afford. It's realistic to be concerned that you might run out of assets, said Christine Benz, Director of Personal Finance at Investment Information Service Morningstar. It's a worry people probably ought to have. Here are some common signs that you're at one of these extremes or the other, plus expert tips for getting back on a sustainable and comfortable course of spending. It's a danger sign if you don't know how much you're spending. That's a problem, financial planners say, because if you don't have a grip on what you're spending, you have no way to know if you're going overboard. People who know where their money is generally have low consumer debt, said Ed Gerson, the second founder of Engage Wealth Group in the Chicago area. Once you start tracking your spending, you can keep it in line with your predictable income. It's as simple as using a piece of paper and a pencil, he adds. It doesn't have to be fancy. It's a danger sign if 4% means nothing to you. A good starting point for making sure your retirement savings last as long as you do is what's known as the 4% rule. It works like this. Assume you have a portfolio roughly split between stock funds and bond funds. The first year of your retirement, you withdraw 4% of the money. Each subsequent year, you withdraw the prior year's amount, adjusted for inflation in order to preserve your purchasing power. If you have a $200,000 portfolio, that means you can withdraw $8,000 the first year, or about $670 a month. If the inflation rate is 2%, you can withdraw $8,160 the next year. Over the past few decades, this system has been a pretty reliable way to ensure you'll have a sustainable income stream for 30 years. The 4% rule isn't gospel. Some advisors think 3% would be a more prudent way to go nowadays. Your nest egg won't last if all of your money is in cash and bonds. And the deeper you get into your 70s, the more reasonable a 5% rule becomes. But what the debate tells you is that a 10% rule could be disastrous. You know you might be in trouble if you're unprepared for rough weather. Bad things will happen that are out of your control. Stocks won't always rebound as quickly as they did from last winter's shock when they regained lost ground before summer's end. So you need to be ready for downturns in one way or another, and that might mean having a separate cash cushion so you can ride out declines without selling stocks, a willingness to trim your spending when the market is down, and perhaps most important, making sure your investments are conservative enough that they don't fall so wildly during market upheavals that you get panicked and sell. You might be in trouble if you're generous. Chances are, if you have children or grandchildren, you want to help them out. In fact, 75% of grandparents polled last spring said they were willing to offer financial support to their family, even if it could jeopardize their financial future. That's fine and certainly understandable, especially in times such as now, but it's at odds with another finding from the same survey. 80% of grandparents said one of their biggest fears was becoming a burden on their family. Financial advisors often cite supporting adult children as one of the most common drains on older Americans' finances. You've got to put on your own oxygen mask first before you help your kids, said Kristen Pugh, a private wealth manager with Creative Planning in Atlanta. Cut yourself some slack if you can't stop saving. The Employee Benefits Research Institute found in 2018 research that about one-third of retirees across all levels of wealth had higher non-housing financial assets 17 to 18 years into retirement than they had at its onset. One possible reason is that this accumulation is seen as a form of insurance to cover the possible cost of health care and long-term care later in life. But another powerful force is at work, too. Studies indicate that people would rather fund spending with dividend checks than with sales of stock that has increased in value, even though dividends and capital gains are economically equivalent. Give yourself some slack if you withdraw as little as you can. The age at which retirees must start taking required minimum distributions, RMDs, from their 401ks and traditional IRAs was raised in 2019 to 72 from 70 and a half. Just because you can wait until 72 to take distributions doesn't mean you have to, points out Margarita Chang, CEO of Blue Ocean Global Wealth in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Noting that some of her clients are hesitant to take the money, Ching tells them that the early years of retirement include the trifecta of health, wealth, and time to enjoy experiences, at least in non-pandemic years. That your money that you've saved for your retirement, she said, sometimes people just need encouragement to use the resources. Give yourself some slack if you've overestimated your expenses. The more you've earned when you were working, the lower the percentage of your pre-retirement income you'll likely spend in retirement, according to Fidelity Investments. Earn $50,000 and you'll probably spend 80% of that a year when you retire, between $50,000 and $80,000, probably 75%. Between $80,000 and $120,000, 70% and more than $120,000, it'll be somewhere between 55% and 65%. So if you're prepared to live on $50,000 a year when retired, but are spending only $40,000, you may find you have funds left for travel, COVID-19 willing, and charity and classes or a new activity. Give yourself some slack if you're moving in with the kids. The Great Recession of 2008 and the COVID-19 pandemic have contributed to upticks in multi-generational housing purchases, the National Association of Realtors notes. Buyers of these homes cite such reasons as the desire to look after older family members, to spend more family time together, and to pool resources to buy more home. If your adult children have invited you to live in an accessory unit or to collaborate on a multi-generational home buy, This may reduce or entirely free up a portion of your budget you'd otherwise assign to housing cost on average, 35% of spending for people 65 and older, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Next, stealing from grandma. Theft by family or friends remains widespread, and what you can do about it. 4 years ago, one of my favorite aunts passed away at age 75. A widow, she'd been independent most of her life, but near the end had developed Alzheimer's disease and was living in a long-term care facility. She had no husband or blood relations nearby, so her stepson-in-law and a family friend were managing her affairs, and they agreed to serve as co-executors of her estate. We knew and trusted them and kept a loose eye on the situation. Before long, though, to our horror, my family discovered that the executors had stolen hundreds of thousands of dollars from my aunt during her lifetime and had even persuaded her to transfer the title on a treasured family summer cabin. When we asked for explanations, they claimed my aunt had willingly given them the cash and real estate, even though her will had stipulated otherwise and she had Alzheimer's. The truth is, they simply thought no one was watching. 2 years and a fortune in legal costs later, my sister and I got the cabin back, but the money had been squandered. Most of the time, I warn you about professional thieves and their conniving methods. In this COVID-19 moment of high vulnerability for our elder loved ones, though my mind has been drawn to the fraud that we rarely wish to talk about, when a family member or friend gains access to a loved one's accounts and takes advantage. The AARP magazine has covered the topic well over the years, but this time of economic challenges got me wondering if stealing from loved ones is still raging and whether better tools or safeguards have emerged to prevent theft within the family. To find out, I called Liz Lowry, former chief of the Elder Abuse Unit of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and now chief operating officer of a financial monitoring service called EverSafe. Her message, these types of crimes remain common. Lowry spent 30 years prosecuting individuals who stole from vulnerable older people like my aunt. Her office handled more than 800 elder abuse cases a year. Lowry is best known, however, for leading the investigation in the famous Brooke Astor trial in 2009. Astor was the daughter-in-law of multimillionaire industrialist John Jacob Astor IV and ultimately inherited much of his wealth. She was renowned for her charitable work, though the public's final memory of her came in her late 90s when she was the victim of financial abuse by her son, Anthony Marshall. In the end, a jury convicted him of grand larceny and sent him to prison. Lowry notes that the real crisis is the millions of financial abuse cases that occur each year without anyone ever hearing about them. A study of New York residents a decade ago found only 1 in 44 victims of elder financial abuse ever came forward. There's little evidence that that's changed. The instinct to keep crimes in the family is strong. One of the root causes of elder financial abuse that Lowry describes is bank privacy laws, which mostly prohibit financial institutions from revealing account information to anyone not named on the account. This means that if your parent asks their bank to send you copies of their statements, it will probably say no. Adult children often become joint account holders so they can monitor things, but this can also lead to exploitation. They may start out helping their parents with good intentions, and then after the parent exhibits signs of diminished capacity, start diverting funds, Lowry says. It often starts small, then progresses into, I wrote a few checks to pay for Johnny's college. She always said she wanted to help with tuition. Or beyond that, home improvement or a new car. And much of the time, no one has a close eye on the situation because, hey, someone known and trusted is handling things for Dad or Auntie, so why worry? That was my mistake. After years of seeing the incidents of financial abuse rise, Lowry decided to co-found a company to address the problem. She partnered with businessman Howard Tischler to launch EverSafe, a new type of financial service that uses artificial intelligence to identify members' financial activity patterns. Whenever abnormal events occur, alerts get sent to a full list of trusted advocates such as family members and financial advisors who can review the member's account activity. Multiple watchers are key, Lowry believes. If enough people are overseeing a person's finances, exploiters will be less likely to attack, and if they do, all will see it. Has the COVID-19 crisis increased elder financial abuse? Studies have revealed that social isolation is a known risk factor. No wonder that EverSafe's customer care unit showed a 30% increase in potential fraud reports in 2020 over 2019. What can be done? To reduce family financial abuse, Lowry maintains, we simply have to do a better job of watching out for one another, whether it's checking on loved ones more regularly or connecting them to technology that can help detect and prevent wrongdoing. Start by protecting yourself. I have long noted that many of the services that for fee financial or credit monitoring companies provide can be done on your own. Establish online access to all financial accounts. Monitor those accounts weekly. Have everyone in your family, including young children, get credit freezes. Order and review free annual credit reports from all three credit bureaus, and so on. Learn these skills now, and you will be able to guard your accounts forevermore. Although if you're just not comfortable navigating technology or don't have the time to keep up with your accounts, it might be worth looking into a financial monitoring service. Guarding older family members or friends is trickier, given your lack of access to their financial accounts. But you can check in frequently, encourage them to sign up for a service, talk often with caregivers, even offer yourself as a trusted advocate. You can also pay for a monitoring service yourself, or if that gives you peace of mind. If we don't make a commitment, we all risk being visited by exploiters one day, some obvious and easy to spot, but others dressed in sheep's clothing. Next, Walmart planning to build massive India warehouse. Walmart Inc.'s e-commerce unit, Flipkart Online Services, PVT, signed a pact with tycoon Gautam Adani's conglomerate to build one of the largest retail warehouses in India as the U.S. giant gears up to battle Amazon.com and homegrown rivals in the South Asian nation. The partnership marks the entry of Adani, India's fastest-rising billionaire, into the three-way fight for domination of India's online shopping space. Up against the Walmart-Adani alliance is not just Amazon, but also Reliance Industries Ltd., the conglomerate owned by Mukesh Ambani, India and Asia's richest man. They all want a slice of a market estimated to generate $200 billion in sales by 2026, turbocharged by pandemic restrictions that are keeping people away from brick-and-mortar stores. Adani Logistics Limited, a unit of Adani Ports in Special Economic Zone Limited, will build a 534,000 square feet fulfillment center in its upcoming logistics hub at Mumbai and lease it to Flipkart, the company said in a joint statement. Expected to be operational in the third quarter of 2022, this warehouse, roughly the size of 11 football fields, can store 10 million units of inventory, the firm said. Bengaluru-based Flipkart will also develop its third data center at the Adani ConnectX facility in Chennai to help the e-commerce company keep its data within India, according to the statement. Adani ConnectX Private Limited is a joint venture between U.S.'s EdgeConX, Inc. and Adani Enterprises Limited, the conglomerate's flagship listed unit. Financial terms of the partnership were not disclosed. Amazon has already invested heavily in fulfillment centers in India, and its data-centric approach enables it to offer next-day delivery for select products in large cities, according to Utkarsh Sinha, managing director at Mumbai-based consultancy Bexley Advisors. It will be critical to see if Walmart's plans follow a similar tech-first infrastructure approach, which could make Flipkart's delivery and fulfillment more competitive. The new fulfillment center being planned is likely to be larger in area than the ones operated by Amazon in India so far, underscoring the potential size of the Indian market. We see this as a great opportunity to serve Flipkart's physical as well as digital infrastructure needs, said Karan Adani, Chief Executive Officer of Adani Ports. The partnership is another sign of Adani's rising clout. His coal mining to data centers conglomerate has rapidly expanded and diversified across sectors, adding $24 billion to his net worth this year. Riding a massive rally in his company's shares, Adani's wealth has jumped to almost $58 billion, the fastest rise in wealth globally. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.